This episode, we're feeling a lot like the Ebenezer Scrooge of RPGs as we explore the past, present, and future of the genre. Welcome to the Thirsty Mage, the RPG podcast, off to a blazing start to the new year after having played through a ton of games. Whether it's deep diving into the backlog that we have or exploring the vast catalog of Xbox Game Pass. Joining me in this episode is a man ready to make an infinite amount of wealth in a finite amount of time, Jordan Rudick.
I really am stuck on a big choice when it comes to Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. The reviews just came out for the game. Obviously, maybe not obviously. I mean, I was expecting it to be good, but I mean, it's hovering around a 90% on Metacritic and OpenCritic. So that's awesome. A lot of people are saying it's, the best Yakuza Like a Dragon game to date, which is really cool. But here's my conundrum. Do I go Xbox or PlayStation, right? And I don't know if you have a take on that, David, or if anyone in the days leading up to launch has an opinion, but I'm not sure which way to go. Like I'm very much been playing a lot of Xbox, and I'm like, oh, but my PlayStation, that's where I played the first Like a Dragon game, and I don't know if there's carryover, and I do like my trophies. Yeah, it's tricky. I don't know which one to choose. I don't know what I'm going to do.
And here all this time, I thought you'd already pre-ordered it.
I did. I have a pre-order. I think it's PlayStation 5, but I'm ready to change it when I go into the GameStop to pick it up. If I do want to play it on Xbox, it'd be my first physical Xbox Series X game, I guess. So that there's that, but I don't know. I'm torn for sure.
Yeah, I got it as a Christmas gift, and it was purchased on like the digital version on PS5. So,
okay. So you are doing PS5 then? Okay. Yeah.
I'm locked and loaded on that platform now. Nice. There's no turning back.
No, that's good. It's good. If I had the digital version, and I'd be happy to just stick with that, obviously. But probably going physical for this one, and just don't. I'm not sure. I'm really comfortable like playing in my office. I've got my recliner here where the Xbox is set up. The PlayStation's downstairs. Still a little bit chilly at night, so it's a little bit warmer up here in the office compared to downstairs in the living room. So, yeah, so I'll probably be, flip-flopping a bunch up until launch here. So this is also a game I was going to wait to pick. So I pre-ordered at a different GameStop than the one close by to me. It's near my in-law's place. So it's a little bit of a drive to get there. And I was like, I'll just pick it up on Sunday. But then I started seeing all the review scores. I'm like, I guess I got to pick it up on Friday night. Friday afternoon. I can't wait. I might have to go after my meetings for the day and go grab it. But I'm stoked. I can't believe how well it's been received. I knew I would like it, but for so many other people to like it too, I think is going to make for a very special game. So
yeah, I'm in the weird boat of so for Rebirth, I wanted the physical edition, and I pre-ordered it through Best Buy. But the way it works is they send it in the mail, so I won't get it. Like I won't have it on the day it comes out because it comes from Toronto. So best case scenario, I have it Friday, March 1st. Yeah. And I'm telling you, man, if they don't get it to me on that Friday, that whole weekend I'm just gonna be a wreck.
Oh, I know. You got to stay off the internet. You might just, go digital, like, and not be able to wait. Like, I feel like I did that with Mass Effect Legendary Edition and Elden Ring. Like, I couldn't wait till the next day. Yeah. I had to buy the digital at, 9 p.m. Pacific or whatever it is. And I obviously had a very good night playing it. But then the remorse sets in the next day when you realize, but I have got a physical one ready for me. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, these big launches, like how much excitement kind of builds up, and you really want to get into it. You want to be playing it at the same time as everyone else. You don't want to be on social media when everybody's talking about it and you're not playing it. It's fun. It's exciting, but it's also can be frustrating too.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of FOMO going around that goes along with these releases. So,
yeah. Well, that's the thing is like when Remake came out, it was during the pandemic and I had ordered a physical copy, but I couldn't go get it because the GameStop was shut down.
Right.
So, okay. uh, So I had to buy that digitally the day it came out, and then I just told them, like, I just phoned them and told them to cancel or whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But I definitely had regret, because now I wish I had a physical copy of Rebirth, but I'll have to just, like, I'm going to wait. It'll be in the bargain bin at some point in GameStop, like for $15 or something.
Oh, yeah, when PlayStation 6 gets announced or comes out.
Yeah,
you know, for sure. So, and they'll do a version.
Yeah. Well, there's already PS5 games that, like, I picked up for $20. Like,
that's
how I ended up getting a brand new copy of Forspoken for $20 because it was already in the discount bin.
Yeah, Square Enix is better be careful. They're turning into Ubisoft with some of the way they drop the prices on some of their games. But I think that's them kind of like, oh, it's a signal that the game didn't do super well. So they do tend to drop the price pretty quick just to get more people playing it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that we just talked a lot of future games there, and we might as well keep on this topic of we'll start with the future and we'll work our way back to the past. So for this episode, we've got three games that I would say are kind of off the radar, is the way I would put it.
Totally.
There's so we got one game that I ended up coming across it on Twitter, and then we ended up getting review copies from the dev, single person developer. So that was it's nice to support them.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I call this a future game, even though we did play it now, both of us, is that I would really call this an early access title to a certain extent. You'll understand why as we talk about it. But yeah, we'll just work with that, and then we'll talk about a couple. We each have a couple other off the radar games that we played lately, and just kind of they go back in time, basically, from the present to the past. So we'll start with Crystal Story, Dawn of Dusk. So it's very important that you know the subtitle, because there is already a Crystal Story on Steam. So now there's two. So you really definitely have to put that subtitle in. And so this is an indie game. The reason it came on my radar is because I saw some people talking about it on Twitter. And then I checked out the trailer, and then as soon as I watched it, I immediately thought of Jordan and then sent it to you.
It was so funny. You put that in the chat, and I took one look at it. I'm like, yeah, it's a classic. Jordan loves the look of this game, but I don't know if I'll like the actual game. Like, it's one of those, like, if it was on Switch, I'd immediately, like, request a review copy for NWR, and I'd play it for sure and review it. But it's funny, these games, like, they have this kind of this, they make this first impression on me, but they don't always kind of follow through with what I'm expecting, I guess, you know, like they this pixel art kind of nostalgic kind of play that they're doing. But then sometimes they end up being wholly their own thing, for good or for worse.
Yeah. And yeah, this has definitely got nostalgic vibes to it. This is, I would say it kind of looks like a Super Nintendo game, kind of quasi Undertale-ish.
Yeah.
And but the main kind of mechanic or main gameplay, I guess I would say, is like a 2D Zelda to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
It looks a little different from a 2D Zelda, but it's kind of in that kind of vein of there's an area that you kind of walk around and you have to solve puzzles to progress. And there's kind of enemies around that you attack with swords and attack with bombs and items and that sort of thing. So there's that, but then when you get to, I believe there's only two boss battles in the game, if I recall correctly, it switches over to a turn-based style, kind of use that term loosely, because it's not really like choose the tactics and play it out sort of thing. Like it really is kind of that Undertale mini game aspect to it, where like you can choose attack, but then when the attack actually happens, it goes to this it looks like a Game Boy game. It goes like to this little square in the screen, and then your character's in it, and then you have to like perform actions in this like smaller screen, where like if it's the enemy that's attacking you, then you have, there'll be like enemies on the screen that you have to avoid, or there'll be like elemental attacks or that sort of thing. But then when you attack, You have to complete a task inside the screen, and then if you complete it, then the attack actually hits. Or in the case of magic, you have to do... it takes 3 turns to charge your magic, which is kind of weird.
And I don't think it did that much more damage than your regular attack. Like, it didn't feel incredibly worthwhile to do the charge.
No, it wasn't right? more than 3, but in the final battle, you're forced to do it, so you have to charge it and then use it. That's the only way.
I figured at some point they would, you know, there would be a reason to have to charge it. Like that this is the I guess you kind of wait to do this attack, charge it up, and then it'll have a special purpose outside of just doing damage, I guess.
Yeah. And my initial thoughts to the game, before I get into the details and why it might come up for others, is I did enjoy what I played. Like I feel like the areas were kind of well designed. There was kind of a neat mechanic where when you're doing the 2D Zelda part, the character has, there's 2 magical things you can do. There's, you start off with like a fire, like you just basically shoot a firebolt. And there's environmental things on the ground where there's like grass that's connected to each other. So you can like, if you hit one blade of grass, it'll burn all the grass. And then that can chain reaction because there's sometimes there's bombs inside the grass that'll go off if you kind of light it all. So I thought that was kind of neat. Most of your gameplay takes place in a mansion-y, like kind of haunted castle sort of atmosphere. So you're basically kind of like walking from one side and trying to find the way up, and then you talk to a character and you go to the other side of the castle, you try to find your way through, and then it all kind of finalizes at the end with this big boss battle. So in kind of like, I guess this game is one of those like, one of those measures of like, do you see the glass half full or half empty?
Mm-hmm.
Because you could say like, you know, there's a lot of good foundation here. Like the gameplay is good. I wouldn't say the boss fights were great, but I feel like they could be polished to be better.
I like the presentation. I think it looks good. I think it uses a lot of different colors, kind of light and dark areas. I think some of the bosses look cool. There's the area or the event when you're kind of you're not in an airship, you're on some flying device and you're kind of looking at the overworld map, I guess, from that perspective. And it's very reminiscent of being in the airship in like FF6 or something like that. It seems kind of borrowed from that. Go ahead.
I was going to say it has that Super Nintendo Mode 5-ish traversal.
Mode 7, exactly.
Or Mode 7, yeah.
Yeah, I know, and I like the different environments. I guess it's just there's not that many of them, right? Like it's
I think
that's the, and again, we're going to talk about this in a second, but it feels, I hate to say it, I don't mean it so like derisively, but it feels like more like a demo. And you mentioned it being kind of like early access-ish, it does feel that way. And you learned something when you were kind of digging into it, you learned something about how the rollout of this game is happening.
Yeah. Yeah. So the game itself is, I did it in 3 hours. It's advertised 3 to 6. I have a hard time. Like, I'm sure some people will put more time into it to get later. Like, I don't feel like I breeze through the game though. So, you know, 3 seems pretty reasonable. I probably could have done it quicker. I don't know. I had brain farts on the initial puzzles for some reason. I spent more time in this initial dungeon area than I should have. And then after that, I went through pretty well. But yeah, so the way that it works is that, so the game's about three hours long. There's like one, like I said, the castle is kind of like the main dungeon, and there's like a couple smaller areas that you'll go to before then. And then when you defeat the boss, the game is over. I was like, well, excuse me, what happened here? Like,
where's the rest of the game?
Where's the rest of the game? I didn't initially see the 3 to 6 hours either. So yeah. I was kind of surprised. I'm like, oh, this is a pretty short game. But then in the credits, it literally says like, this is like the first part of a bigger adventure. And I'm like, okay. And then it says that there will be, more content added throughout 2024. And I'm like, this sounds like an early access game then, because it's like you're giving us, like you said, you could almost compare it to a demo, like especially Square Enix. Like you can get like 3 to 10 hours from a Square Enix demo these days.
Yeah, yeah.
So which that's basically like the length of time of this game. And then no guarantee of like, okay, well, when in 2024? Like there's, you know, it's just a one person working on it. And like I said, they did a great job. I know there is some initial, like I ran into bugs when I first downloaded the game. And then over, I think I started it. And then like a week later, I left it for about a week and I came back because the bugs were kind of getting on my nerves at the beginning. And when I came back to it, there'd already been two updates in the meantime, and they seem to have really done a lot of fixes, which was nice. But yeah, like the asking prices is 20, I think it's 20 Canadian, yeah. Which yeah. I thought was a little steep for this type of game. Like when you're only getting 3 to 6 hours and then no guarantee of additional content. So it's, yeah, again, it's one of these things. It's like, you know, the half full of me says like, hey, this was a great experience. I hope there's more. And, but then the other, you know, the half empty is kind of like, I don't, you know, it's not quite ready yet though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's funny that I didn't realize there actually is a demo of this game. I don't know if we had seen that or come across that, but it's funny to have a demo for a very, very short game like this, where that might not feel incredibly fulfilling when you get to the end of it. Yeah, I read an article.
The demo is probably the tutorial section.
It says, I was just literally just reading it. It's two areas. It's the marsh and something else.
Oh, probably the forest.
The mansion and the enchanted marsh. Those are the two areas.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So they do let you go in the mansion.
Mm-hmm. I just come across an article from 2021. Mentioning a Switch release too, and obviously that hasn't come to fruition in 3 years. So and again, we want to give people the benefit of the doubt, and it would be very cool if this game got more content to it. It probably needs, you know, a few more areas and maybe even like kind of a doubling of the length probably to get to a place where I think you're kind of more comfortable with that price point, I would say. But I do think it's a novel game in the way that it kind of combines a few different genres for sure. And again, I think the presentation is very strong.
Yeah, I would say at a minimum, wish list it and just keep an eye on it because yeah. When the content comes, it might be worth it. And then if there's a sale, I would say it's worth picking up.
For sure. And people could try the demo too, right? Like now that we realize yeah. there is a demo, it would give you a sense of at least how the gameplay is. And if you dig it, yeah, wish list it and see what comes the rest of the year.
Yeah, but like I said, after coming off of Minish Cap, I was kind of ready for some additional Zelda-like experience. So I think, especially for a single developer, like it just seemed like they did a really good job of, capturing that kind of essence or whatever, and yeah. Making a game that was fun to play.
Yeah, and I think it can be tough to kind of draw, you know, maybe draw inspiration from a bunch of different titles and come up with something that actually works. But I think this does. We just want more of it and maybe a little bit deeper. Yeah.
Yeah, but speaking of bugs, our next game up here is this was wild to me. So I'll just start it off because we should get. I just want to kind of get the negative out of the way. But so Jordan came across a game on Xbox Game Pass called Infinite Guitars. So this is our present game. This game's supposed to be, you know, in usable order at this point because it was
released a year and a half ago at least. You know, like it's just been out there. I don't think there have been promises.
I didn't know it was that old.
Yeah. I think end of 2022 or beginning of 2023, something like that.
Yeah, so this is called Infinite Guitars, and this is from Humble Bundle, is the publisher.
Yeah.
And I guess kind of the selling point is that it's kind of like a rhythm RPG. Like, it's an RPG, but the combat is like this rhythm-based battle system or whatever. And so Jordan sent me the game, and I'm like, all right, I'll download it, and I'll play it, and we'll talk about it. And so, you know, I download it, and I start playing, and I get to like the very first, I'm not even at the tutorial. It's literally like 15 seconds into the game. And they're like, you know, here, try out the rhythm battle. I'm like, okay. So I walk over, I hit, you know, engage the battle. And my character's just standing there doing nothing. And I'm like, what's going on? There's nothing going on. Like, I'm hitting every button. Nothing's happening. I can move the character around on the screen, not doing anything. And I'm like, okay, then, you know, this is weird. So I'll just restart the game. Same thing. And I'm like, this is really weird. And so I went on YouTube to see like a walkthrough or whatever to see what was supposed to happen. And what was supposed to happen is that the battle system comes up and like the rhythm game starts.
Mm-hmm.
And for the life of me, I restarted the system. I did everything. Cannot get this game to run.
Yeah.
And then you and I, we're both using Xbox Series X. Like, I have the latest update. Like, I have no clue what's going on.
I thought for sure you were playing it somewhere else, like on your Steam Deck or something like that. Oh, this must be a different version problem. But for us to both be on the same version and for you to, you know, restart and still come across the same thing is really strange to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, Infinite Guitars, it was a shame that you couldn't get further in it, because I think some of the things about it, like in the novel battle system and the way it kind of combines rhythm game mechanics with RPG ones, I think is interesting for sure. The developer is actually in Vancouver, so I might have to give them a phone call and find out what happened to your copy of the game. But yeah, I think the thing that stands out to me the most is the music's really good. And obviously with a rhythm game, you want there to be really catchy music. And it is. It's kind of upbeat, like in a rock and roll, like kind of synthy poppy as well. But very, very, very good. The premise is that you are, I think you're on a ship with your dad, and you're kind of going to these societies that are planets that have kind of been destroyed, or some post-apocalyptic kind of situation has taken place. And you're going to collect like scraps and these some kind of like robotic cores or mechanical cores that power up your abilities and I think generate energy for the society, something like that. I might be missing it. I didn't find it super captivating. But yeah, so these cores seem to generate different abilities for you. And so what's interesting about the game is that, maybe a little frustrating too, is that I played the first two worlds, finished the first world and went to the second one. In that space of time, your character gains two new abilities and including like a buff to one of them. And then by the time you get to the second world, you've lost those two abilities and you've lost the buff and you've got a completely different ability. So your attacks, I guess your arsenal of attacks is going to be in flux for parts of the game. So you have to kind of adjust a little bit. The combat is a mix of turn-based and there's also like action sequences, almost in an Undertale type vein, where you have to time your button presses to dodge enemy attacks. Like a target will come on the screen and your character has to kind of like run away from the target or dodge away from the target. Your attacks either involve like a kind of quick time event or literally playing like the guitar music rhythm game portion again. But if you do well, you do a stronger attack. The buff I mentioned to your attack, which you get on the first planet, you can extend the rhythm game to do more damage. And of course, you have to, you know, execute more button presses with accuracy. I actually got to the point in the second planet where you get a second character. And there's looks like there's slots for four characters, and you're going to think this is bizarre, and I found it bizarre too. Rather than when your turn comes up, your whole party takes a move, or your whole party takes a turn, every individual does. In this one, you choose which character moves, and then they get grayed out, and you can't choose them again. You have to go to a next person. But in between their moves, the enemy takes turns. So it's like, so to me, I'm wondering, what is even the point of having multiple party members if they don't all get a turn, right? It's really, really bizarre kind of choice in an RPG, and I don't think it's a good one. I think that, you know, if you're going to have a stable of party members, as you get more, you want to feel like your team is stronger, and you do that through them all having turns to attack the singular enemy. All the battles seem to be your party against one kind of robotic foe. They'll do slightly different attacks that you have to dodge, but there is kind of get a little bit similar after a while, at least until you get to the new planet, and then they change up a little bit. There's two things that kind of happen in the environment, the overworld that you're in. No, sorry, not the overworld. There's an overworld where you choose which planet you're going to take your little spaceship, and you choose which planet you want to go to. But when you're on the planets, you're kind of walking around an environment. You're collecting scrap, which for a very weird reason, you don't actually get to spend very often. Like I finally found a shop like 2 or 3 hours into the game in on that second planet where I got to spend my scrap. So you're spending it like a currency, I guess. But in the minute to minute, when you're walking around, there are these kind of guitar like pillars, which is where David got stuck on the first one. That's why he couldn't progress. You have to activate the pillars and play a rhythm game to open up doorways or to open up passages. So David obviously couldn't make any progress because he couldn't open up the first door. The very first passage to get to the rest of the first planet. So he literally saw like nothing of the game, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, these pillars are scattered about. So you're constantly opening them up and playing the rhythm game. And I think the rhythm game is good. And again, it gets you hearing the different music tracks, which are quite entertaining. So I never kind of shied away from wanting to open up those doors or explore a little bit more to maybe find more scrap. Or you can also collect these kind of infinite shards that I think power up your abilities as well. There's another kind of mechanic that functions both inside combat and out. Something to do with, I think it has to do with cores. Like you have this meter of cores that kind of act like a mana or a magic meter sort of. And as you attack with certain attacks, you get more of this, this core meter fills up, or if you dodge enemy attacks, like at the last second, you'll also gain extra core points. And the core points can be spent in battle to either heal you or to power up your abilities and make them stronger. So you could use like a maybe you're swinging your guitar at the enemy, and if you wanted to power it up, you can engage like 2 or 3 of your core points, exchange them, and then you'll do a stronger guitar smash attack. Outside of combat, you can also heal up, but the healing is less effective out of combat for some reason. You heal 100% of your health bar if you use a core point in battle, but only 30% outside of combat. So that's kind of a weird thing. Also outside of combat, in the kind of when you're exploring around and I guess, opening up gates and trying to get to the next objective, there are enemies walking around the overworld, and that's fine. There's not too many of them. You can generally run around them. But there's also these, they're just kind of like, they look like just little machines or like generators. And they every few seconds, they emit like a sound wave or like a colored wave, like a red or blue wave. And you have to do this rolling move to dodge through them, I guess. And it just kind of gets cumbersome after a while. Like you want to just explore around and get to the objective, but you constantly have to like roll and dodge these things, these waves. And if the wave hits you, it does like, 5% of your life bar and you fall down and it's a whole little thing. It just gets a little bit frustrating. I think that part is maybe a little bit too much. I think it slows down the pacing. I would say take that out. I think there's just a general sense of maybe more polish would be needed here, a little bit more feedback on the game, because I think it has things that work well, like the music and the rhythm game. But I think the combat takes too long. The enemies take too long to kill, especially when it's largely one-on-one. Even when you get different party members, it still feels like a one-on-one battle. The moving around for the environments is quick when you're running, but then when you have to slow down and constantly roll between these damaging waves, that slows it down too. So I see, again, like with Crystal Story, I see potential in this game. Obviously, this isn't something that's in early access. I don't know that more Infinite Guitars is coming or that they're still working on this game. I don't know. But I feel like there is a really good game kind of buried underneath some rougher spots that could be ironed out and you'd get something stronger. Obviously, it'd be a lot better game if everyone could progress through it and actually play the game and see what it's all about. So I don't know if anyone else has tried Infinite Guitars on Game Pass or elsewhere. And run into that, realizing that I think it did come to Switch. I'm seeing releases on Xbox, Switch, and PC. Now I'm curious to kind of check it out and see what reviews were like for the game. I don't remember this coming across my desk or seeing anything about this game. I don't know that it released to much fanfare, unfortunately. But it could be one of those hidden gems. And if it does work out for some people, if you're into rhythm game mechanics and some adventure. Action and RPG stuff built in there as well. It's probably worth a look, especially if you're into like music games. But I think there's just a little bit of stuff in here that kind of rubs me the wrong way and just doesn't quite hit as well as other segments of it do. So, yeah.
Oh, it's It's got one Metacritic review, and yikes. It's 50.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so this is for... I clicked on Switch, right? Yeah, so this is for Switch. Here's the quote, box quote for the...
Who is it from? What site?
Touch Arcade, it says.
Okay.
I don't know that one, but it says, I hope the team is working on fixing the issues and expanding on progression, because I want more from this world. Right now, it feels like playing an electric guitar with rusted strings.
Oh, jeez.
Despite being down on it in its current state, I'd love to buy the soundtrack on vinyl or an art book. Everything about that is lovely. I just wish they would fix the technical issues.
Yeah. We're
and then we're the PC version is not much better. It's got 5 reviews for a 62% average.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. There's it looks beautiful. We need more patches. Its biggest problem, and even RPG Fan has one up.
Okay, yeah,
it's got a 69. It's interesting.
It's got to be one of the highest number. Then.
Yeah, Infinite Guitars has been extremely buggy and glitchy since its release. Even though multiple patches have come through, it still needs more development and QC time before it's should have been debuted.
Yeah.
So yeah, who knows? Maybe they have. Well, it's funny, like you said about the Xbox Game Pass thing. Maybe they had a deadline to meet to be in Game Pass.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. And again, if this was something that came out at the end of the year, if it did launch at the end of 2022, like all the more reason why they might have had to push it out for that year, or else maybe missing some kind of incentive or bonus or something like that. I don't know, but
the Xbox Hub gave it a 90.
Oh, geez. Okay, well. I think they played a different game than the one we may have. They certainly didn't get stuck at that first guitar, but yeah, again, the theme of potential, maybe unrealized, just kind of shines pretty bright here. I think that was just kind of the way I was thinking about it when I was going through it. I'm like, oh, the things that I don't like, there's more of them as I play through, like just a little bit more things slowing you down, and the things that are fun, it's a little bit harder to get to those.
Yeah.
I was really surprised to get the second. I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to play until I had two objectives for wanting to talk about this game on the podcast before we were going to talk about it. I'm like, I want to get a second party member because I know there's more of them. I can see them like on the cover art for the game. And I want to get to like a town. I want to find, how do I use my scrap that I'm collecting, like thousands of scrap. I'm constantly getting achievements popping on Xbox. Oh, you've collected 500 scrap, 1,000 scrap. I'm like, great. When do I get to use it? Like, I don't need any more achievements for this. I just want to spend it. And then I finally do that. I bought some equipment. I'm like, oh, okay, that's good. But yeah, then the fact that the party member doesn't get their own attack is really, really silly. Yeah, this definitely needed more time in the oven, maybe a few more eyes on it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not frustrated by it, but I'm just like, I feel kind of disappointed. Like, yeah. I wish that it had the opportunity to kind of realize its potential or be able to fix those things that came up. That's all.
Yeah, and you wonder if they're still working on it or what's going on. But like you said, because it's like a year old now or more, then it's, doesn't sound like it's probably, like they might have moved on to something new.
Yeah, probably moved on to the next one. It would be my guess as well.
Yeah. Well, we've got a theme so far.
Was your game published by Humble Bundle as well?
No.
Okay, I'm like, oh,
it was self-published.
We got all these Humble Bundle games. That's a new theme of the episode.
That would be funny. No, this one, I'm pretty sure it was self-published. Okay. I'll check while I'm talking here, but. Yeah, the other thing that I've been doing a lot this year, ever since my Retro Christmas. No, it is published self-published by the
okay,
dev.
Got it. Yep.
Is I've been really into retro lately. Like I said, got the Game Boy Advance SP for Christmas and got a bunch of Game Boy Advance games, and I've been playing through them. Just finished Fire Red recently. That's not even the GBA game I got, which is kind of funny. But I had a couple of GBA games that I own too. Like I own Tactics, and it's funny, I own the games, but I didn't have anything to play. Oh no, I had my DS Lite.
The first Tactics?
Yeah, Tactics Advance.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yep. There's a sequel as well, right? The sequel to that game too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I got those. So been really into it, and then I recently went down this black hole of of Android handhelds, which just was like quite an eye-opener to me. Because I always knew, like, I've seen these handhelds on Amazon, and I've always kind of, like, poo-pooed them because I'm like, oh, this is just, like, garbage that you throw on Amazon. You know, it'll probably disintegrate in your hands when you get it or whatever. Well,
there's so many. There's so many of them that you yeah. think they can't be good because there's too many of them, right? Like, if they're good, there's usually one or two of them, right?
Well, and lots of them don't even have, like, real names or anything. They're just, like, these weird numbers and...
Yeah,
so, like, it's just like, oh, yeah, whatever. But then I started seeing, like, found a couple YouTube channels that really got into the details of them. And there are a bunch that are, like, really high quality. I know I've heard of Retroid before, but I was looking. They just came out with, it's called the Retroid Pocket 4. And seeing what it can do is just incredible. Like, it has a pretty... new chip in it. Like, it's got, I can't remember, it's not a Snapdragon, but it's like an equivalent of like one of the higher end ones. It's got a pretty decent screen. It's got like the D-pad, it's got everything it can, and then because it's Android, it can play like emulators and any, you know, ROMs that you own or whatever. But then it also can do this at, like, at the Game Pass, like the cloud play, and it can do the PS remote play and all that stuff. And yeah, it's just, it looks great. And then there was, I saw one, it's called the Odin 2, just came out. It's got an OLED screen. It plays 1080p. The one I was showing showed, it had like Yuzu on it. So it was showing all like these Switch games that were playing better on it than the actual Switch. And I'm just like, holy crap. And it's cheaper. Like, well, it's about the same price as a Switch, I think. It was like $369 American right now. And just blown away, because it's just like, wow, like this is crazy. And then it just got me thinking, like, I remember last year I had bought a Razer Kishi for my phone because I was getting into like the Xbox remote play and PS remote play, and kind of fell off it because the Kishi controller wasn't exactly comfortable, especially compared to like a regular controller.
So I
just kind of fell off of it. But then just seeing all these handhelds and thinking like, oh, I've got this nice screen on my phone and I got the Kishi, like, there's gotta be a way to play these. Like, if I'm seeing all these nice emulators and stuff, like, this has got to work for me. And then it did. And then all of a sudden this week I've like blown through five or six NES games. I've just been on a tear through them because I'm just having so much fun. They look incredible on my Samsung. I got like an A52, which is not even a top of the line Samsung, but it's got a really nice OLED 6-inch screen.
I mean, sometimes it's just having the right medium for these games that gets you really in the mood for them, right? You have you have a really enjoyable or accessible place or way to play them, and that's what kind of hooks you back in, right? It's not always the games themselves. It's just like, oh, it looks so good here, or it feels so good playing it like this.
Yeah, and so the game. So this is our past game that we're going to talk about, and it's Shadowgate. So this was a Kemco title back from 1987. It was a point and click adventure that was made for the original NES. The reason I kind of caught it was because it was one of the games that was kind of shown when I was watching these videos. Like, it was shown as an example of like, you know, NES emulator or whatever, and I'm seeing this game and I'm like, oh, that's neat. And so I picked it up, and yeah, I just was having fun with it. Like, it's just kind of this weird game. Like, so the way it starts off is that, so the whole point of the thing is that there's this warlock that I guess is going to destroy the world or take over the world or something. And so this wizard drops me off at the front gate of this guy's castle, this warlock's castle, and was like, yeah, have, you know, defeat the warlock, we're all screwed, and then bye, and just gone. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, so I guess it's all up to me. So, you know, you're looking, basically you're looking at a screen, and it's just kind of like command style. Like, you can talk, you can grab, you can, like, there's all these different things that you can do, and then you see kind of like a scene in front of you. So there, you know, in the top left, there's kind of like a room or wherever you are. Like, when you first start the game, you're looking at the front door. So you need to like figure out, okay, well, how do I open the door? So there's the different options. So you can push around and you can check stuff. And I had noticed that, like, if you like tapped on the skeleton head on top of the door, it opens and there's a key behind it like that's the scene I seen when I was watching this YouTube video. So I knew right off the bat, I'm like, okay, here's a little trick I can do right off the bat. But then, yeah, you just kind of go in and you're just kind of goofing around, like just like seeing what you can do, picking up stuff, seeing what items can do. Like you kind of die almost at every turn, but the game is so forgiving where it's just like, oh, it just puts you in the last room you're in. So yeah, it's like you don't lose, like you're not losing your items, you're not losing progression. But for an NES game, I just couldn't believe how detailed this was. Like I had died. So I was just doing my thing, you know, walking around, seeing what was going on. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, the lights went out and you died. And I'm like, what do you mean I died? What the hell? Yeah. So I had not noticed or didn't know. And this is the thing with NES games is I bet you if I had the manual, all this, I would have known all this stuff going in. But there's like two torches in your menu that steadily like go out as you're walking around. And so you have to find torches within the game to replenish these torches in your that are showing on your menu. Like you see them up in the corner and like it's clear as day, like when they're at full blast and as they like go down to nothing. So if you let them hit nothing, then the game's over.
So that's just why you keep picking up the torches, because they do run out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I was looking at some screens. I saw people keep, you know, and some walkthroughs. I was like, oh, pick up the torch. I go, you got seven torches. I'm like,
yeah,
what you got to use these for something? Are you putting them somewhere? Are you lighting something on fire? No, you just need them for the light, I guess.
Well, you know, that's the other funny thing is that you can set stuff on fire.
Well, you can. Okay.
So yeah. You could. So obviously that's what I was doing.
Like, yes.
At every turn, I'm like, okay, what can I set on fire in this room? And so yeah, because you can use it, so you can hit use and then you can go up to the torch and then you can just click on something in the screen and it'll tell you if it'll light a firework or not. And so like and there actually is things in the game, like to progress to the end of the game you do have to light some stuff on fire. Like I walked into this one room where there's all these coffins, so I'm just like, the first coffin I open, there's like a slime that comes out, and then I was like, oh, okay, I'll, you know, oh, I'm not going to touch it. I'm pretty sure I'm going to die, whatever. So I leave it. And then there's a coffin to the right. So I open that and a mummy comes out. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to set him on fire just for fun. And so I set him on fire. And then there's like a weapon behind them that's useful. I'm like, oh, sweet. You know,
nice. That worked out.
Yeah. So I got that. And then I went to the next room and there was a broom in there. So then I thought, oh, I wonder if I can like broom up that slime and do something with that. And nope, I'm dead. Like you find out like touching the slime like immediately like melts everything on you and you die.
right
but yeah, there's just so many like all these like odd and funny things. Like there's I walked into one room where there's like a dragon at the other end of the hallway and there's these items on the ground, so I'm like, okay, well clearly I'm gonna try to steal these items or whatever and not die. So, you know, I pick up a sword and then the dragon, burns me, game over.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
So then I go back into the room. I'm like, okay, I'll pick up the shield first. And so when you pick up the shield, you do shield yourself from the heat so that you can pick up a couple other things. But then you can only pick up three items in the room and you have to leave or you'll end up, the shield will melt or whatever. So it's just like all these funny little things. Like, and then there's puzzles and there's secret passages. So like if you're looking at a scene, it's always good to kind of like, okay, where's a visual, like there's these small visual cues of there's a button here or there's somewhere that you can insert an item there. And that's pretty much like the entire game is just figuring out, okay, what can you do in this room? What from previous rooms would help me in this or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and the great thing too is like there's like a million guides. So kind of the way I was playing was like I would just go in and get as far as I could, and then if I'm feeling like I'm hitting a dead end or whatever, I just go to the guide and be like, okay, well, how do I progress? And it's like, oh, well, you need this to put this here and that there. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. Now I've got access to more of the castle. I'll go fiddle around, and every time I just hit a brick wall, I'm like, okay, you know, I'll do this. And for the most part, there's lots of stuff that's easy enough. Like there was you get to this one room where there's just a Sphinx that's like lying in the middle of the room, minding his own business. And I'm like, well, I want to use those stairs that is behind you. So you just kind of walk past him. And then the Sphinx is like, well, no, you have to solve a riddle first. And I'm like, okay. So then the riddle was kind of obvious, which was funny. So I, you know, the thing that you needed for the riddle was in the previous room. So you just go back and get it and you go along. And, but there's so many weird things. Like there's at one point you end up outside and there's lightning that keeps going off. And then you realize it's like, oh, you know, I have this rod, like there's this hole in the ground where you can stick a rod. So you stick the rod and then lightning hits it. And then it like activates this secret compartment where there was like a scroll or something in it. And then you're looking for keys, you're looking for spells. Like it's such a weird, like, you know, it's definitely dated, like in the sense of like, you're moving the mouse. There's like a, you know, a pointer or whatever, and you're moving it with your D-pad, and it's not this, you know,
not ideal,
not that quick or anything. Like, well, it's not
the first iteration of this game was actually for Macintosh, right? Yes. So that's the 1987 release. It was on computers, and then it was a couple of years later that the NES got a port. I think it's a pretty good port, actually. Like, just having a look at some of the PC versions from prior, and yeah, the way they obviously the Switch version in color. I think the Macintosh one was black and white. And so the game actually looks quite good. I think the visuals still hold up to an extent.
Yeah.
This one, you know, it's funny you mentioned an adventure game, because I've been thinking this week about, I was trying out different Game Pass games just to get some achievements and stuff like that. And so one of the games I booted up was not a re-release, but they did a new Monkey Island game a couple years ago, if you remember, maybe even last year.
I was thinking about
like
getting
Return to Monkey Island or something like that. And there were complaints at the time about like the visual style of it, but I think it, just in terms of gameplay, I think it's it reviewed quite well, and I think it's definitely return to form for that series. But I was thinking to myself, like, I play like the first 30 minutes of the game. I'm like, I hate this. I hate it. It's not the game. The game is fine. It's just like, I think that's just a genre that I've tried so many times to get into, and I really want to like it. And I really like what those games do, but I can't. I'm just, for whatever reason, they just don't, it's not that they don't click. Like, I could get through them, but they don't entertain me. Like the picking up the items, the putting them somewhere, that, you know, checking everything to make sure you've not missed something. For whatever reason, that loop just doesn't satisfy me. So I feel like adventure games are just ones I'm just not going to pick up anymore. I feel like I've tried a lot of them, and maybe it's the pacing of them. Like I go through games pretty fast now, and adventure games are ones that are hard to play quickly.
Because you have to be slow and methodical.
They are, and you have to be thorough, and you have to read and pay attention. And when I'm playing games, I don't always want to do those things. And I think that's just something that I've learned about myself and about adventure games, is that we just don't mix anymore.
Yeah.
It's funny, you mentioned like in this game, in Shadowgate, when you die, you just go back to the previous screen. I think about like older games, like the King's Quest games on PC, where you could get to a point in the game where you die and you lose everything. Yeah. Or you forgot to pick up an item from like the first screen of the game. Well, you can't beat it now. Like they some of these, it's also a genre that's kind of been purposefully like esoteric and kind of like gated off in a way. You know, it's like, oh, you don't know adventure game kind of tricks and tips and tropes. Like, oh, you're in big trouble. Like you're not gonna have a good time. You know, like they insulated, I guess, would be a word for some adventure game series where like you had to kind of know what they do and how they function, or you weren't gonna have a lot of fun with it. And I'm not saying that's happening with Shadowgate or with Monkey Island or something, but I think it's maybe tied to some of the reasons why I don't super get into these games anymore.
So Monkey Island's in Game Pass.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the new one with the new art style. Yeah, it looks good. I think if you're a Monkey Island fan, I can't imagine that you wouldn't like this game. I was checking out reviews too. It was like 85, 86, 87, like around there. Like, it looks like a really good game. I think it's on Switch too. I'm in the short time that I played it, I recognized that this is a very good video game, and I just it's not for me.
They're usually not for me either. Like, I've wanted to play like Night in the Woods, I think, is like that too, right?
A little bit. It's more, it's not like point and click style. It's more, what would you even call it? Yeah, you're moving your character around. It's a little bit more it's more like a narrative game than an adventure game, I would say. There's not a ton of like choice or options and stuff. It's fairly linear from what I can remember, and I really liked it. It has a really good story, but that game focuses a lot more on telling a good story as opposed to like putting this key in this door. Like
Thimbleweed Park. Did you play that one? Yes,
that's the one I thought you were going to mention just now. Yeah. I tried multiple times to play it. I want to get into it. I couldn't answer any of the puzzles. I'm like literally getting stuck constantly, and I'm just like, my brain just doesn't work around what it's asking me to do. I for whatever reason, it's just it's impenetrable.
I think that was the one. I think I might have got it for free when Epic first, like when the Epic Store launched. I'm pretty sure that it was
one of the first free ones they gave away.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think I have it there. I think I've tried to get into it a couple times, but I'm like you, like I've it's pretty rare that I can get into a point and click. So I was kind of surprised that I even enjoyed Shadowgate.
So I guess it kind of takes the genre in these games to its roots, right? Like there's not a ton of options on the given screens that you have. Like you've got a few different commands and you have a somewhat limited inventory. I guess it builds up over time, but it's not like, I don't know. I'm thinking about Thimbleweed Park and like, there's a phone in the game where you can call and get hints. I took every hint they could give me and I still have no idea what to do. it was just something where it's not like maybe a combination of things I need to try. I'm just missing something. But in Shadowgate, I don't know. It's a little more limited. So I don't know if that's going to happen. I think everyone can kind of eventually get through it.
There was definitely a few things where I was like, I don't know if I would have got that on my own. So I think a large part of it is being able to have the guide and just not caring that it's like, you know what, like, you know, I'm not going to spend 40 hours trying to figure this out. Like,
right.
I'm just going to enjoy my time with it. You know, I would say probably 80% of the puzzle stuff done myself. And then, you know, got some help on the end. Like the game does a pretty good job of telling you, like there's a book that literally explains how you have to fight the boss, because you don't, when you get to the boss, you're not really fighting the boss. Like there's like a puzzle around like something else. It reminded me, the ending reminded me of, I don't know if you ever played The Immortal on NES.
No, but these are, I know of it. And I've when I was reading about Shadowgate, The Immortal came up again. I'm like, that makes sense.
It's kind of a similar game in the sense where you're like walking around a castle and you're doing things, but The Immortal was another thing where it's like there's like the final spoilers, I guess, for a 40-year-old game, but there's like this final battle where there's like a wizard and a dragon, and which is funny because that's how this one ends. There's like you, a wizard and a dragon, and initially you would think that you have to fight the dragon to win, but what you do is you have to have an item it's like a magnet that takes. There's like an item in the wizard's hand, and you have to take that away from the wizard because then the dragon attacks the person that doesn't have the magnet.
So
the dragon kills the wizard and then just leaves. And then that's how you win the game. So it's kind of like, again, it's kind of very similar to the ending here where there's like, again, spoilers for 40-year-old game, I guess, but it's almost the same thing. There's like this, it's a behemoth that comes out and you have to do something to convince the behemoth or to kill the behemoth. And then the behemoth accidentally kills the warlock.
Oh, that's good.
So it's, but like I said, there's a book in the game that you come across where it says like there's a riddle, but it's easy enough to figure out where it's like, there's these four things that you need before you get there. And so you just got to make sure you have them.
Now, does playing this game through, does this make you want to go back and play more of these games like this? Because I think NES did have a bunch of titles, adventure game kind of corridor, explorer, point and click kind of games like this one, right? Like, I think of something like Maniac Mansion, which is an interesting one.
Yeah.
And I always got freaked out by it as a kid, but I like hearing people play it, or I like hearing people discuss it as well. Like, I think it's a very interesting game, the way all the different things that you can do. It's kind of point and click adventure, but also choose your own adventure, right? Because you get different characters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then there'd be a bunch of sequels on PC and like Day of the Tentacle and stuff like that.
Well, I find it interesting. I guess to answer your question is like, I might try some more, but at the same time, I also feel like I could be saturated them very quickly.
Sure. Yeah.
But I do find it neat going back to some of these games where as a kid, I had no idea what to do. So I just gave up. And now as an adult where I'm like, oh, well, you know, it was quite clear this is what I was supposed to do. But mm-hmm. as a, like an 11-year-old, like I either didn't have the patience or the know-how to be like, you know, to get past this or whatever. Like, it reminds me like the Roger Rabbit game, I think, is like a convoluted mess. Gosh.
Yeah. Disaster.
And so I've rented it before from Blockbuster as a kid, but I just walk around punching stuff. Like, I have no idea what to do. But now as an adult, I think I could figure it out because I know some of the stuff, and you know, so it's.
Yeah, I mean, the question is whether figuring it out would actually make it fun or not. Maybe not. Like, you'd be like, oh, I get what they want me to do. It still sucks, but I don't feel totally inept, you know, I don't feel like it's my fault that I'm not making any progress.
Yeah.
This is Shadowgate, you know, totally a game I would have either checked out on the rental shelf and be like, not for me, or rented it once and be like, I wasted a weekend renting this game that, adolescent Jordan is not going to enjoy compared to some of the other choices that I would have had. So, yeah, but it is good. I'm glad you brought up kind of adventure games, because I had been thinking about just adventure games as a genre and them, you know, being ones that I think as you get older, like you also want to maybe narrow down the types of games you play a little bit, just because you kind of know what you like and what you don't like, I think. And so
there's only so much time left for all of us. And,
and again, we complain about our backlogs and all the new games coming out, and Game Pass was like a perfect opportunity for me to kind of explore a few different genres that I don't get into as much. And I downloaded a bunch of games that I knew that I wasn't really going to get into or play very much, but I just wanted to kind of test them out just to kind of prove myself right that I'm like, I don't really love these types of games, and then that's okay. Like, I haven't wasted money on them, right? Like, I've signed up for Game Pass for 2 years. Now I'm free to experiment as I like, and it is great having that space to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I do hope you play more NES games, because I like this kind of like reliving the NES library through you, and you kind of posting on Discord or in Slack about like, you know, your recent NES conquests. And before we even started recording, I just heard you playing Super Mario Land, and just hearing that music again, I'm like, oh, I love that game, and the music's really good too.
I love padding the finished game stats.
Yes,
like,
of course.
I can plow through 5 or 6 games in a week and be like, look at all the games I'm finishing.
Yeah, just be careful you don't get on a kick of like trying out all these Android consoles, and not even just Android consoles, like just any kind of handheld device, like knockoff or otherwise, that can play all these games you want to go back to, because it could be another expensive endeavor for you.
Yeah, especially if one of these consoles steals my credit card information.
It's a ticking time bomb. You're eventually going to find one of them. So just be careful out there.
Yeah.
So I think that'll take us to the end here. Wanted to go back and look at some random games. Like, I feel like when we talked about Game Pass initially, we were playing more of like bigger games, you know, like a Dragon Gaiden. What did we even talk about?
Starfield?
Outer Worlds, Starfield we're going to get to eventually. I want to do an episode on that with you. I did want to bring up one quick thing in the spirit of trying out games and maybe sticking with them, maybe not. Golden Sun and its sequel, I think it's called The Lost Age, just came to Switch. They're on the NSO service if you have the expansion pass. So we talked about maybe doing a Golden Sun episode somewhere down the line. And so I booted it up. I played like the first 20 minutes or so, and I'm like, I remember why I never get very far in this game. The beginning is so slow. It is painfully slow trying to get just any action part or exploration part. There's so much like preamble to the game before it really gets going. And even when it does get going, you're kind of exhausted by that beginning. So really weak opening. I'm going to push through it, but I remembered why I have never finished that game, and it's because the opening sucks, unfortunately.
I remember when I bought it a couple of years ago, and I played the first hour, and I'm like, oh man,
it's rough.
What is everybody talking about? This game sucks.
Yeah, it's really rough. Just way too much set up for the situation of the heroes and meeting so supposedly important people and finding out about your adventure, and just get on with it, you know. So I think we'll get to it at some point. I do want to know an episode. If not individual ones on both games, because I'd love to try the sequel, because it's a direct sequel. It follows up right after the first game finishes, which I didn't realize. So I want to play that too. But
yeah,
yikes! Just gotta get through this crappy beginning part. But yeah, one time this year, I think we'll get there. So
yeah.
But onto Infinite Wealth. I think we're aiming to do an impressions episode of that probably next week or the week after. So stay tuned for our thoughts on that game. I know we're going to be pretty heavily into it, like a lot of people out there. I saw on social media lots of buzz for that game, so that's great. And then right around the corner, Persona 3 Reload too, coming to Game Pass. Awesome. I'm gonna, you know, that might be the reason why I get Infinite Wealth on PS5, just so I have one Xbox game and one PS5 game on the go, as opposed to two on the same platform, right? So that could be my reasoning. I gotta keep tinkering, get back in the shop and figure it out. But yeah, thanks everybody for listening to our episode on a few different kind of random games in a theme of past, present, and future. You know, let us know what you think of any of these three. If you played them, if you had different experiences than we've had, let us know. We've got a Discord. David always links to that. You know, check it out on thirstymage.com as well. There's links there too. And yeah, I hope everyone has a great week ahead, and we'll talk to you again next week. Bye for now.
Bye.